Party time on the Create Podcast.
Oh, it's such a good place to be, the Create Podcast, especially if you are in your retreat of being at home with very little to do, or maybe lots to do. But the Create Podcast is a wonderful place to hang out, regardless.
Great. Podcast, great for social distancing. Speaking of social distancing and the fact that we are all now inside our homes, we have three things to tell you about to work on your soul as you go within. One is, for the next 4 weeks, every Wednesday night, Natalie and I are doing our online Zoom Create class. It is absolutely free. You can sign up for it on our website. And it's going to be a jam. It's going to be like the old days where we used to teach every week.
Yeah. And so we're taking the exact same model of Create, those live Create classes that we used to teach in New York and LA and all around the world. And we're taking them onto Zoom. And because we want to accommodate everyone's place financially and everything right now, we wanted to offer these classes for free. There is also on our website a donation button. If you want to give a donation back to the Create community, you are welcome to. But you can check out www.thecreateseries.com under Create Online, and you will get the Zoom link, and you can join us for free every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's going to be so fun.
And on the watching at home tip, we have just done this huge, we're calling it the Epic Relationship Series.
It's actually epic.
It's so, we recorded so much content. When Natalie and I went away this summer, we started talking about how all of life is this creation from the foundation out, and how in order to create your life, it has to start with that relationship with self and spirit. And then it goes out into your relationship with your creativity and your dharma, and then into your relationships with the world. But how it all starts at the base of this foundation. So we created this video series that works through each one of those layers and how you get into right relationship.
And each of these modules or these little sections is like, I don't know, something like 6 or 7 hours long. Like there's so much content, because we were coming up with all this content while we were traveling in France and Italy together all summer, and then in Bali. And we just were so inspired and spending so much time together that there are mountains of content. So we have a special pre-sale going on right now, kind of a you're stuck at home coronavirus sale. So you can go on our website and get all of these for a really steeply discounted price. You can buy them all, and then they will be sent to you as soon as they are all available. And that's going to be just a wonderful way to pass your time.
Yes. And then finally, if you are home and you are really going inside, what does it mean to heal? Because as we get a moment where we look at, I want to be healthy and I want to be whole, we have our dear friend who we are interviewing today on the podcast.
Surprise!
Kelly Turner, PhD. And she has this incredible docu-series that we're going to talk about in length today. And it is called Radical Remission. It is healing against all odds. Now, you may know Kelly Turner. I feel like almost all of my friends do, that she wrote this New York Times bestselling book called Radical Remission. She goes into the healing factors that are in all these survivors that show what they did to heal themselves, to heal their bodies. And in this docu-series that she's doing with Hay House, you get to see these survivors speak about their own process, and also you see specialists who talk about how does healing work inside us. So let's turn it over to the beautiful, the incredible, the intelligent, the wonderful Kelly Turner, and let her talk about her work and what led her to do all this.
Hello. Welcome to the Create Podcast, Kelly.
I'm so happy to see you guys. It's
I'm so happy.
In this very crazy time, I'm just so happy to see your smiling faces and hear your voices.
Can you just go back and tell our audience a little bit about like how you became this person that wrote these books and did this docu-series and the girl that we know today, so we can get a little sense of who you are and how you came to know us?
Oh boy. All right. Well, how far back do you want me to go? I'll just give you the highlights. Before I met you guys, I was at Harvard in college, and I was screenwriting and dancing and singing and living my create best life. And that was wonderful. And then I sort of chickened out and did not, you know, go for my screenwriting dreams, and ended up in New York City after college and sort of lost and confused. And I ended up volunteering at Memorial Sloan Kettering. And that was like a very big turning point, because I found really intense meaning in helping these kids who had cancer. And long story short, that led me to go back to get my master's degree in counseling at UC Berkeley. And that's what I was doing. That's what life was going to, I was also like getting my yoga teacher certification and reading all these spiritual books, and life was good and life was great. And then I sort of got this, this detour, because I came across one of these cases of radical remission, you know, what doctors call spontaneous remission. And it just wouldn't let go of me. You know, I think the problem is that I'm too inquisitive, you know, like my husband, my partner since we were 18 and met at college. He's like, the problem with you, Callie, is that you always need to know how things work. You know, like you always need to know, you need to understand things. And it's true. Like I really like to know why things happen. And when I came across this case of this man, Shin Terayama, who healed his stage 4 kidney cancer after being sent home on hospice care, I wasn't cool with just being like, oh, okay, no one knows how this happened or why this happened. All right, cool. I'm just going to go about my day. I was like, no, I need to like fly to Tokyo right now, find this man and ask him every single question I can think of. And that's sort of what led me to then go on for my PhD at Berkeley and study these cases, you know, these thousands of cases that are in the medical journals that everyone was just ignoring because they couldn't explain them. So that's what I did, and wrote the dissertation and turned it into a book. And then that's when I met you guys. It was after the book came out, after I was burned out from having a newborn and a new book at the same time. After a couple of years of that, I sort of crawled out of my exhaustion of early motherhood and crawled my way over to a Create class in New York City. And you two ladies, let me just tell you, podcast world, these two ladies saved my soul. I was reading Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, one of my all-time favorite books. And I was going to Create classes, and I was just sort of like finding myself again, because I'd gotten really burned out and really, really lost from a soul perspective. And that's when I met you. So I'll stop there. What else do you want to
know? It's so great, because I still remember, Kristen, us teaching, and I still remember seeing Kelly in class, like, kind of like in, and I just so appreciated that you were coming into these classes with so much wisdom and experience, and you had done so much, and yet here you were just saying, hey, I just want to be in community, and I just want to be surrounded by creative people, because there was some loneliness and isolation that we all get into when we feel like we get disconnected from our hearts. And it's been so cool over the years of getting to develop from those first days of just meeting you to genuine friendship with you, and now also having the honor of being with you in the process of this docuseries. It's been an incredible journey.
Yeah, it's been awesome. And I'm so glad that it's full circle, because in those early days of going to Create, I did not want people to know about my book or who, you know, that I had this cancer researcher side to me, because that part had gotten a lot of love and attention for the past 10 years. But the creative part of me, I had been completely ignoring. And so, you know, I came to your classes as someone who wanted to get back into screenwriting and wanted to get back into filmmaking, and, you know, felt like I was, had missed that boat, and it was, you know, it was too late. And so I just remember coming to those classes and really not wanting to tell people what I did for a living. I was like, I'm just here to learn. My name's Kelly. I'm just here to learn. I'm a screenwriter. And I think it was like a year or two after taking classes, Kristen pulled me aside and she's like, hold on a second. Is your last name Turner? And I'm like, oh no. I'm like, please, you know, can I just keep being a screenwriter with you? But it's okay. You know, I needed those 2 years to just not have you guys know me through my research. But the great thing is that when you guys did find out about my research and that little secret got out, you guys had, you know, knew the creative side of me. So I felt like I could work on blending the two sides of me, which really the docuseries is finally what I was trying to do, was blend these two, you know, my left brain and my right brain, right? My researcher and my creative side. And you guys were just so instrumental in that. I have nothing but love and gratitude for your classes. Oh, you know, when you say the good old days, oh, those were the good old days. Those weekly classes were so phenomenal. I feel very lucky that I was, like, you know, there for those 2 years of those classes.
Thank you. And you are such a storyteller and a healer. And by healer, I want to say you are concerned with how do we step into our most optimal selves? It seems like you have a burning passion for that. And you have a burning passion for that as a storyteller, so that the stories you want to put in the world are about how do we get to what is essential in the soul and bring that forward.
Yeah, absolutely. You couldn't have said it better. I mean, sometimes people are like, oh, Dr. Kelly Turner, you know, you're a doctor, you're a healer. I'm like, no, I'm a researcher. You know, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm a PhD researcher. But what really drives me is not telling people how to heal, because that's not, you know, I'm not a medical doctor. What drives me is stories that heal. So I'm obsessed with them. When I find a story about healing or a story that heals my heart or my soul, that's my jam. Those are the stories I want to hear. They're the stories I want to collect. And then, of course, in my own storytelling, I hope that I can offer stories to the world that heal, whether it's healing, helping to heal your body or your soul or your mind. You know, that's, if you can heal through stories, I think that's the best way to heal.
And we're being fed, especially right now, we're being fed so many different stories. And there's a lot of stories that vibrate at a really deep level of fear, and a lot of stories that vibrate at a level of separation. And it's exactly as you're saying, and there's also the presence of these other kinds of stories. And it's really important that as we stay present and mindful to everything around us, that we say what feels nourishing to me and what I'm ingesting is up to me. And I can choose to ingest these kinds of stories of love and communion and hope. And all these stories that are featured in the docuseries are so inspirational. You can't watch them and not just be filled with tears and hope and community and love and how indomitable the human spirit is. And if it wasn't for you being brave enough to say, I can hold one in each hand. I don't have to choose. I can actually be everything that I came on the planet to be. And everything that I am is both a researcher and a creative. And there's a story being told through me in both departments. And I get to use my life to say yes to both. And that to me is the most inspiring story, when there's so many people listening who are maybe saying, because I chose to be a parent, I have to take this off the table. Or because I chose to, you know, live in this location, I have to take this dream off the table. And you really represent someone who says, or I can find a way to write my own story that feels inspirational and hopeful to myself.
Yeah. I guess that's what I've been trying to do. It's, I think our society really pushes us to get into a box and stay there. And that has never felt true to me. And the more I look around at humans, I don't think any of us are just one thing. You know, I mean, I'm a mother now too, and it's amazing and incredible, but it's also not something that defines the whole of me. And in fact, when I became a mother and had to completely, especially for those first 4 months, just completely give up everything that used to be part of my daily life, right? Like my entire daily life completely changed. It was really disorienting. I was like, where am I? I've lost myself. You know, where's the part of me that, you know, thinks and creates and, you know, brings meaning to my life and to other people's lives? And, you know, suddenly I was just a milk machine who wasn't sleeping. And it was really discombobulating. So yeah, I think a big challenge of the last 10 years of my life has been to try to make time and room and space for all the parts of me. And it's not easy, but you guys inspire me to give myself permission to do that. You know, I think also as we become grownups and we become adults, it starts to feel irresponsible. Really, like there's just like this big societal like pressure of irresponsibility to say, you know, do you really have time to doodle and journal and meditate and screenwrite, you know, like really like, you know, you're a grown up now, you have bills to pay, you have, you know, little babies to care for and feed, like, you know, is it really appropriate to be doodling in a journal, you know? And that voice is so strong, and that, you know, going to create was so important for me to, get a handle on that voice that said, you know, you shouldn't be creative right now. That's child's play, you know? And thank God I went to your classes, because I can tell you right now, this docuseries would not be in the world without those classes. I was at a real stuck point of not knowing how to get back to my creative self and start telling stories visually, which is what I've always wanted to do. So,
Kelly,
I'm grateful.
Thank you so much. And I'm really curious what you learned about the process of filmmaking and storytelling in making the docuseries. Because I know that the process is always a teacher, right? And it works on us in the doing of it. So I'm so curious, as you're bringing this extraordinary gift to the world, and I do want to tell all of our listeners that it's free on Hay House. So
yes, so
they can watch this and be transformed by it. And I also want to say, when I read the book, the reason I pulled you aside is because I had gotten an email from Hay House about the book. And as I was reading it, I was like, oh, I have no illness, but I actually, this book is just speaking the truth of what these factors are to be a healthy human in the world. So I'm really curious, as you brought this film forward, what it was teaching to you.
Well, I think the research, you know, which now started 15 years ago, you know, everybody's like, oh, you know, have you changed at all by learning about these radical remission survivors and the 10 factors that they're using? And I'm like, absolutely. You can't sit through interview after interview of real life people who, you know, basically defied death and defied their doctor's expectations and not have it make you feel just a little bit guilty, like reaching for a donut, you know, like it's like, once you know, you know, and once you know, you can't go back. It's not that I'm perfect at all. I don't have the perfect diet. I'm not the perfect person whatsoever, but at least I know now when I'm making choices that aren't good for my body, mind, and soul. You know, I have a lot of left brain knowledge about, you know, foods and practices that are good for the immune system and good for the parasympathetic nervous system and all that stuff. And then through the teaching that you guys taught me, you know, the wisdom that you guys passed along is also tapping into like energy and emotion. And those are things that radical remission survivors have been saying to me for 15 years, but it wasn't until I got into create classes that I was able to really, really start doing some emotional and spiritual practices that allowed me to just get in touch with, you know, the barometer, sort of like the inner barometer of our emotions. And when we have a good day and when we're in our joy and when we're connected to, you know, things that really move us, you feel really good. You feel really good in your body. And you guys sort of gave me permission to trust those feelings, right? Because so much of what we're taught, I think, in school is trust what you read, trust what the experts say. And that is important. It's important to trust knowledge, but to trust sort of the intuition and the emotions and the feeling of spiritual connectedness. You know, we're not really taught in our society to put much faith into those intangible things. And you guys gave me permission to put my faith into those things. So this is the long way of saying, like, changing who I've become has been like a 15-year process of being exposed to radical remission survivors and also experts and teachers like you guys. The filming process in the fall was crazy. that was nutty in its own way, just because
that's what I want you to go into.
That was crazy because I was suddenly thrown into being the filmmaker that I'd always wanted to be. And really, without any prior experience, I was suddenly directing a 10-hour docuseries. Now, I shouldn't say without any prior experience. I've been, you know, working on TV sets for the past 2 years here and there just to get experience. So I wasn't completely green, but I certainly had never directed anything before. So it was like, literally feel like someone not only threw me in the deep end of a pool, but threw me off a high dive. And then I have to realize, oh, I threw myself off the high dive. Like, no one did this to me. I raised my hand, jumped up and down, and was like, yes, please, 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 you know? So it's sort of weird when you're like, you know, suddenly on the road week 3 out of 10 of filming, and I'm like, okay, like the adrenaline's gone, and you're like, wait, no, this is really happening. Like, this is, okay, we did this for a week, and it felt like we were playing movie. And then we did it a second week, and it felt like we were still playing movie, but we were getting kind of good. And now it's week 3, and I'm like, oh, this is really happening. Like, it's not being called off. It's not being canceled. Like, this is actually happening, and we need to stay on schedule. We need to stay on budget. We need to get the interviews that we need. I need to make these people who aren't actors, you know, you guys are professional performers, but in a documentary, you're working with people, you're coming in, you're being welcomed into their homes, and they're not actors, and you set up all these cameras and lights, and then they get really nervous. So then I had to be like, dig into my therapist roots, right? Because I got my master's in counseling, and suddenly I'm back into like counseling and trying to get people to come down off of their fear and like do some deep breathing and just focus on my eyes and like, let's. So I just feel like this fall was nuts because I was thrown into this deep end of directing and producing a docu-series. And I had to use every skill I've ever accumulated, except perhaps tap dancing, in my entire life. So it was wild, but yeah, I'm just sort of in awe that it happened and we did it. And, you know, I just sat down last night with my husband to watch the first episode, and he has been, you know, with me rock solid, taking care of our kids while I was gone all those weeks. I was home on the weekends, thank God. Otherwise I would never have agreed to do it. But he saw like the hard work that went into it, but he didn't, you know, he wasn't seeing the dailies. I wasn't showing him anything. So for him to suddenly sit down and see the creative, final product, he was like, whoa, okay. Now I see what you were doing and what you were filming. And, it was really neat last night to sit down with someone who in some ways had been so involved with the docuseries, from like the back end point of view, but so separated from the footage, right? Cause he's home with the kids. He's not in Colorado with me on this beautiful organic farm filming. And so all of this footage is new to him. I don't know. It was really a neat moment to have it all come together, in the final product. But yeah, no, this fall was nuts. And now I'm like, and it continued, right? Cause we finished filming. I got to film you lovely ladies. It was hard to track you guys down, by the way. I just say to your podcast listeners, these women, if they didn't have self-quarantine, shelter in place restrictions on them, it is hard to, you know, you're in Paris, you're in Vancouver. We had to, and this was me being like, you know, so one of the 10 common factors among radical remission survivors is increasing positive emotions such as joy and love and happiness. And as I was trying to think of experts who could teach on this, you know, the only two that I could think of were you guys. Of course, there are other experts, including, you know, Ellen Langer, the mother of mindfulness, who we interviewed for this episode. And so you guys are, you know, juxtaposed with the incredible Ellen Langer PhD. But in terms of like people who are on the ground, like teaching classes on how to be happy, I don't know any other teachers in the world right now who are doing it as well as you guys. So I felt very strongly that I had to find a way to pin you two down at the same time. And at one point with the filming, it was looking like we were only going to be able to film Natalie in New York, because Kristen was filming a Netflix show or directing a Netflix show in Vancouver. And I was so sad because I'm like, having Natalie without Kristen
is like
peanut butter without jelly.
It's like it's peanut butter without jelly. It's like Fred without a stare. You know what I mean? Like, you guys, you know, I mean, I guess, and I'm biased, right? Because when I first met you guys, you were team teaching. So to me, you've always been a couple. A teaching couple, you know, you guys are work wives. I get it.
Often people ask us, wait, you're not really married?
Yeah, I know. And I, at first I'm like, so they're a lesbian couple. That's awesome. No, that was a crazy assumption to make. But, anyway, I'm just so glad I was able to pin you guys down, and filming you guys in LA was wonderful. Cause that was our last out of town shoot. After that, my crew's from Austin and San Antonio. So after that, we went to Texas for our final weeks. So I was still on the road, but it was our crew's last hurrah. And can I just tell you, podcast listeners, that not only did we film this beautiful interview about increasing positive emotions, but then we went upstairs to the roof of this hotel with my crew, my very small crew, and they like proceeded to heal every single person in the crew that had come to the shoot that day. And it was like, what? It was like magic. It was like,
we can't help ourselves.
They couldn't help themselves. And I was so grateful, because that's the magic of you guys, is that anyone that you guys teach or come in contact with, you just want to help them, you know, like find their soul. And it's a real gift. And I know we captured, you know, glimpses of that in the docuseries, but you know, to have my crew upstairs with you guys and get like the full 2-hour like private session basically with Natalie Kristen was such a gift for them. They still talk about it. They're just they're like, those two are amazing. Those two are truly the real deal. And you are.
Well, and it was such a gift, Kelly, because I actually do remember when you reached out, and sometimes, and this happens especially in the filmmaking world, people will reach out to you because you're friends, or you want to work with people because you're friends. And I do remember feeling so humbled when I was looking at the list of experts that you had on board. I mean, these are major doctors and mindset leaders of our time. Like, you have really like the creme de la creme. And I remember having this like feeling and talking to you about that, saying, but what, I don't know what Kristen and I bring to the table, you know, like, and you said, just bring what you talk about, just bring what you know, just bring who you are. And that was so freeing for me, because I think so many creative people have a block of saying, but why me? Or I'm not far enough along, or I don't really have anything to give. Or like you said, I was kind of green, but my heart just wanted to make this thing. And so the wanting to show up sometimes feels like bigger than your trust in yourself to be the right person to show up. And I think that as a creative act, you must just keep saying yes to the next creative impulse, or yes to the next creative invitation. So when you said come, we're like, let's find a way to do it no matter what.
Yay. And I'm so glad you did. And I think it kind of opens up this idea of what is an expert and what makes someone an expert. Because, you know, on the one hand, for me, when I got my PhD and when many of my friends have gotten their MDs, and part of those letters after your name and that expertise is simply just reading and reading and reading other people's works on a subject. And so there's this sort of idea in academia that to become an expert means to sort of memorize all of the information that other people have written on a topic. And once you do that, then you're allowed to do your dissertation, which is to write, to add your voice to that mix, you know? And typically your dissertation is your first original work in academia. So you spend, you know, 3 to 4 years just sort of mastering the field, meaning really just reading and memorizing, and internalizing and drawing connections and all that. And that, you know, that takes skill as well. But, you know, the idea of becoming an expert is just sort of memorizing what other humans have said. And then once you've done that, then you're allowed to try to add something new. And that's great. And that's cool. But what I love about you guys and other practitioners who just start teaching because there's stuff that's been helpful for you, and so you want to share it with others, right? There's something so authentic about just being on the ground and working one-on-one or in groups with people and
trying out exercises. I mean, I was your guinea pig at Create, and you guys would come in and be like, we had this really fun idea. And we tried it with the two of us and it worked. And we want to try it here now with you 60 people. And it was really fun to have you guys come in and just play. Now, obviously we're not like performing brain surgery on each other, right? Like we're not doing anything dangerous and it's fun to just play and experiment. But I think what makes you guys experts is your willingness to take these inspired impulses that you guys feel in your hearts and to share them with others with love. And then to be open to see what happens, you know? And yes, I have many PhD and MD experts in the docuseries, but I also really wanted to have people like you guys who are, may not have those letters after your name, but to me are as equal, if not, you know, more qualified experts, because you're working day in and day out with people on their happiness. Because you can have a researcher on happiness who's researching it and studying it and having people take surveys on it. And that's great. And there's absolutely a place for that. But when you guys are, I mean, when I say this, like in these Create classes, there was never a dry eye in the house because you guys were just the cry makers. You guys would just, you would just say things and have us do these group exercises or these partner exercises that would just bring up our emotions in such a forceful and strong way that it was like group therapy, right? I mean, it was really, really powerful. And there is deep expertise in one, being able to facilitate that, and two, being able to learn and see what works, you know, as you're offering that to people with love. And you guys do that in such a beautiful, safe way that there's just no doubt that I wanted you on this docuseries right alongside PhDs from Harvard. Absolutely. There was no doubt in my mind. I can't believe there was a doubt in your mind. And I love that you ever overcame it. So, yeah, it was just wonderful.
Kelly, you were wonderful. And I'm
so wonderful.
Curious about, I know a lot of people have loved Radical Remission. In fact, there are so many people that once they know that I know you, they're like, oh my gosh, Kelly Turner, she changed my life. I've heard that so many times. Wow. And I was curious, what for you is the difference between Radical Remission and Radical Hope? What is the offering of the second book for those of us who've read the first?
Yeah. The second book comes out April 21st. So I'm excited about that. It's taken 6 years to write a second one. To me, you know, people kept coming up to me and saying, so what's next? What's next? What's next? You know, what's new? What's new? And my answer was, you know, the beautiful thing is that there isn't anything new in the research. The research is just being confirmed over and over again. And, you know, to me, that was reason not to write another book, because there's no, you know, there's really no new findings. The nine factors for my first book just kept getting confirmed with every new case that came into my website. But then what the response that I got from cancer patients who would reach out and ask me that, they were like, really? So like you continue to get more cases and it continues to be the nine factors and I can trust that? And I was like, oh yeah. And they're like, well, that's huge. Just to know that this wasn't like a fluke of research, that this continues to happen week after week, you know, month after month. And so there was that, just the idea of like wanting to let people know that the research has continued. And in fact, since Radical Remission came out, you know, the website has been flooded with new cases, right? So while it was hard for me to find cases for my first book, I have literally been deluged with Radical Remission cases. And that was news for people. They were like, wow, like that's really nice for me to hear that the cases have greatly increased and that they keep saying that the people are still doing these nine things. So there were those two reasons to write the second book. And then for me, the biggest thing that finally like tipped it over was that this 10th factor of exercise kept coming up over and over again in all the new cases. Enough so that I actually went back and reanalyzed all my older cases, the ones that were before Radical Remission came out. And I called some of these survivors up and I said, you know, look, I just want to double check something because exercise did not come up at all in our 3-hour interview. And they were like, yep, that's right. I couldn't exercise. I was too sick. I was stage 4 cancer patient. I'm like, okay. So I'm like, are you exercising now? And they're like, oh yeah, every day, of course. And I said, okay, when did you start exercising? And they said, as soon as I was able to. And I said, okay, now go back to when you were sent home on hospice in a wheelchair. Did you do any sort of movement? I'm not talking about exercise. And they're like, well, you know, I couldn't go to the gym. I couldn't lift weights. You know, the only thing I could do is like walk around the block. And I was like, okay, wait, stop right there. Did you walk around the block? And they were like, yeah, every day. And then I would walk 2 blocks when I could, and then 3 blocks. And so it turned out that with all these early cases, these people were exercising. They just weren't calling it exercise because it wasn't a 60-minute spin class.
Wow.
And so then I had to sort of reevaluate all my early data and go back to all the cases and be like, were you moving? Were you walking to the kitchen table and back to the couch? And then did you move? You know, then did you walk a block? Then did you walk 2 blocks? Then did you walk a mile? And the answer was yes, that they all were moving as much as their bodies would allow them to move. Mm. And so once that 10th common factor really crystallized in the research and emerged from the data, then I was like, okay, now it's time to write another book to let people know that it's not that exercise isn't important. It's that we need to call it movement because it's movement until it becomes the 60-minute spin class. And so once all those factors were in place, I was like, okay, I guess it's time to give people an update and let them know this wasn't a fluke. The research has continued. It's continued to be confirmed. And, you know, side note, we should let people know that moving your body is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how that came about.
Yeah. And Kelly, as we're in this climate right now with many people being at home and afraid and in a pandemic around the world, I know that you've been super clear about saying, you know, the stories I write about, they're not my stories. I'm a researcher and I'm collecting data and presenting the data and, you know, showing people a series of stories. What would you say would be, from your research perspective, the kinds of things that would be helpful for people right now who are, you know, in the state of being that they're in, from your research, what would be important for them to keep in mind or to know right now?
Yeah. Yeah. It is a crazy time right now with COVID-19. I'm still sort of in shock by all of it. Our schools just closed down yesterday and I'm now a professional homeschooling parent. So life is really, really nutty. And I'm not immune to that. Like it's been really affecting me just because it's, you know, life isn't, you know, everything that we knew about life is suddenly stopped. So I've found myself dealing with a lot of anxiety and stress and worry. You know, I think it's normal to have all those things. And then, you know, you just worry about the world and the people who are vulnerable and the people who don't have a house like I have. And, there's just a lot of things to worry about right now. And I have found myself, not feeling very healthy and happy and whole. And the nice thing about my research for me personally, I'll just say, is that, you know, these 10 common factors that this unique group of people have used to overcome their particular, cancer diagnoses, right? We don't know if it works for every cancer patient. We just know it worked for this group of people. But the nice thing about these 10 factors is that they're just sort of a recipe for a good life. You know, it's these 10 factors are eat well, right? Like eat whole plant-based foods and exercise and take herbs and supplements to support your body. And then the other 7 are mental, emotional, spiritual practices. And it's just always sort of a touchstone for me to come back to say, okay, am I stress eating? You know, am I going for the fat and the salt and the chocolate and the chocolate and the chocolate and the chocolate and the wine? Or because I am, because that's the stress response, right? But then it's reminding myself like, okay, like go make a soup, you know, like go make something that's going to nourish you and nourish this stress in a calming way, right? So I know what to go upstairs and eat when I want to reach for the chips and the sweets and the fat and the sugar, right? Like that's a normal stress response, right? Like our hunter and gatherer ancestors did that, right? When a hurricane was coming, that's when you really tried to scarf as much sugar and salt as you could, because those things used to be really, really scarce. So it is normal to want to reach for those unhealthy, sugary, salty, fatty foods during a time of pandemic. And it's fine. I can give myself that, you know, a little bit of chocolate, but it's also nice to have my research inform me to be able to go upstairs and make, you know, a fatty, you know, brothy soup, you know, that's slightly healthier than that bag of chips. You know what I mean? So certainly knowing how to make healthy food choices and knowing to like stop and move my body more than once a day during times of stress has been really helpful. But also just coming back to these seven mental, emotional, spiritual shifts, you know, like, you know, you guys are experts in increasing positive emotions, but you're also experts in feeling into your intuition and deepening your spiritual connection practice and trying to find ways to release suppressed emotions like anxiety, right? These are the factors that Radical Mission survivors use, and I use them in times of need. And I'm certainly using them right now. I am using them and having to really go pretty hardcore into them because I'm trying to deal with a lot of anxiety. And so, I'm grateful to have the reminders of what to do to get myself back on track. And it's not just to get yourself back on track from cancer, the people that I study have used these strategies to get themselves back on track from cancer. I always like to say I'm not against Western medicine at all. But you know, the people that I study, Western medicine didn't work for them. So they have to use these other strategies. And during this time of COVID-19 and this uncertainty, it's been really nice for me to, you know, look at these, you know, I literally have like 10 things on my wall right now from the docuseries. I have my list of episodes. And so it's like, I just look up, I'm like, okay, have I like tuned into my reasons for living today? Have I, you know, deepened my spiritual connection or made any sort of spiritual connection today? No, not at all. Because as soon as I get on, you know, as soon as I wake up, I'm checking the news. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, my research is sort of my own personal guide for life. And especially during this crazy moment in life, it's been really nice. And I'm very grateful to all the Radical Mission survivors out there who've taught me these things because they've really given me a gift. So I'm grateful to them. What are you guys doing to get through this crazy time? Teach me.
One of the things I wanted to say that you have brought up in this interview that is one of the things that really struck me when I read Radical Remission was the importance of intuition. And really, all of the cases at some point went, hold on, I'm going to listen to something deeper inside of me that is instructing me. I'm going to listen to... And they listen to, should I do this? Should I not do this? Should I go this way? Should I not go this way? And I'm also reading Glennon Doyle's book, Untamed, right now.
Yeah.
And it's so fantastic to be reading it right now during the pandemic because the big message inside that book is listen to your intuition, listen to your knowing, get quiet, and there's a part of you that knows. And this is something that Natalie and I teach on all the time. But I do think there's an opportunity in this social isolation that we are kind of forced into right now to say, hey, everything is being pulled away and I'm forced to go within. And maybe we can give up some of that time checking into the news. I keep saying if something really important happens or changes, someone's going to tell me. But what I can do is use this time of letting go of outer stimulation to really go deep into that intuition, because there's something inside of me that knows and is wanting to guide me and steer my life. And so when I read it as one of the healing factors in your book, and I know it in my, as a director, that the thing that I either am on or off about is if I'm listening to my intuition when I'm creating, there's something that ends up working. And if I stop listening to my intuition and I get swayed off of it, or I don't pay attention to that gut impulse, I kind of pay the price, as it were. Like there was a part of me that knew when I went against it, right?
Yeah.
So I do think there's this opportunity right now to say, I'm going to develop my relationship with myself like never before, so that I come out of this experience and I just know where that knowing is inside of me. I know where it lives. I know how to communicate to it. And I know what it's trying to tell me. It's a muscle, and I think it strengthens over time.
And I do think what I've been noticing in a lot of the Eastern traditions, we'll talk about this too, is that this particular pandemic we're facing now has to do specifically with the lungs. And when we look at kind of the Eastern way of looking at it, the lungs and the heart have to do with unprocessed grief. And so this is an opportunity to get really quiet and say, what is unprocessed in me that wants my attention? What am I grieving? Am I grieving Mother Nature? Am I grieving politically? Am I grieving feeling separate from my dream? You know, many people, and as I listen to your story, Kelly, I can hear almost like people saying, well, but if I had the gifts of being a great researcher, am I allowed to still do this other thing that my heart wants? And so many people have this grief inside them that we don't give ourselves permission to do what we came to the planet to do. And so this grief has built up inside of our hearts and created a deep sense of isolation, of competing with one another, of feeling like there's not enough for everybody. And these things are now all on the surface as an opportunity for us to heal them. And when we come out the other side of this, if we've really done that work of really checking in with our heart every single day and saying, hey, what do you want me to know? You know, and this beautiful space and wisdom of the heart that actually receives intelligence 3 to 5 seconds before the brain, that there's a space inside that can give us, hey, this is the part that's been ignored. This is the part that wants to heal. And I genuinely think if we did a practice of moving our body every day for joy, connecting with someone we love every day for joy on the phone or on Zoom or however it is, and connecting with our heart every day for wisdom, I think we'll get to the other side of this with a power that is one that we've never seen before.
I hope so. Wouldn't that be just the most amazing silver lining of this whole thing? You know, this idea of self-isolating, I think, is really hard for a lot of people right now, in different ways, right? Some people are fully alone, and that's really scary and really maybe uncomfortable to be alone with your own thoughts all day. I'm alone with 2 very young children right now with my husband. And so we're all, you know, just going bonkers, and the kids are bouncing off the walls. But I think this is a beautiful moment for much of the world to try to befriend the discomfort that comes from silence, you know, and you guys did such a great job teaching us how to do that in the Create classes, which is like, if you get really quiet, what you can hear is maybe a sad voice or a scared voice. And a lot of times we're, you know, being gregarious with friends and we're out having fun, or we're binge watching all the TV, and there's so much noise in our life that we don't hear that soft intuitive voice that says, hey, what about me? Or, hey, I'm really feeling neglected over here, or I'm really scared of this, or I'm really sad about this. And I do think that this could be a beautiful time for people to sort of sit with their uncomfortable feelings a bit. Just to see what's on the other side of them. Because as you guys taught me, what's on the other side of fear and discomfort and shame and irresponsibility and all those things is somewhere deep down is just a feeling of love and peace. And this is an interesting time with COVID, because a lot of the people that I study, they say, you know, I got the cancer diagnosis and I was just so afraid of death and there was so much fear. But then through that fear came this intuitive voice, and the intuitive voice was not afraid. And I think a lot of people in this world right now are dealing with really intense fear. It's not, you know, the fear of a cancer diagnosis. It's entirely different. So I'm not trying to compare them, but there is fear right now, a lot of fear. And if there's one thing I've learned from my research is that when a lot of fear comes, the intuitive voice can sometimes actually get louder. And it can start talking to you a little bit louder, and it can start communicating to you. You know, like a lot of cancer patients had never heard an intuitive voice before in their entire life. And it wasn't until they were diagnosed and facing death that, you know, in between their sobs, or when they were done sobbing, you know, 2 hours after sobbing in a pile on the floor, they just heard this soft, calm, non-fearful voice speak to them. And that was, you know, very key for them in their healing to hear that voice for the first time and to pay some attention to it. And I think that with all the fear that we're feeling right now, perhaps this is a good moment to turn off the news and to sit silently for half an hour, an hour, and feel everything that comes up, including all the fear and the sadness, and then see what's on the other side of it. Because usually what's on the other side of that fear and those tears, somewhere waiting for us somewhere is an intuitive voice. You guys taught me that. You guys have some great prompts for getting people to get in touch with their intuition. Maybe you should share them with your, with your listeners. Like all these things from Create are coming back to me. Remember you guys used to give us like prompts, like questions to ask our inner voice. And in the first couple Create classes, I was like, oh my God, this is so silly. Like, what am I doing? Like, this is silly. You know, you feel silly or you feel like, yeah, you just feel silly. But anyway, you guys should remind me what some of those were.
It's so funny. These are actually all through the new course that we just created. So we have, the first section that's developing your relationship with yourself and your spirit. I think there's like 10 different sections and each one has a series of questions and prompts to have you go in so that you can really dive in and navigate that. But it's one of the things that we love to do is to find those exercises. And a lot of them come because we've designed them for ourselves, right? Because we're playing with it in our own morning practice and going, oh, there's something doesn't feel quite right. What's my spirit trying to say? And so how can I lean into that?
Yeah. And I really have been feeling intuitively that we get really afraid of outer authority when we're not connected to our own inner authority. You know, we're afraid outer authority will hurt us or let us down or not do what they're supposed to. And then it creates a feeling of unsafety, whether that's our parents, whether that's our politicians, whether that's our doctors and nurses. And there's something about getting in touch with that inner authority, knowing, oh, there's a deep wisdom there. And when I learn to trust myself as my own inner authority, my relationship with outer changes entirely.
Yeah, it becomes a lot more peaceful. It becomes a lot more relaxed. Yeah, I mean, I think what's really coming up for people here is just death. I mean, I think we just need to like honor what's happening in the world, which is we're all facing our fear of death right now.
Yeah,
you know, death of our, you know, my parents are over 65. You know, I have friends with underlying conditions. I have two young children I want to stay around for, and I want them to stay around. So really, if we look at what's happening and all the fear in the world, it all really comes down to just mortality. Mm. That's what we're afraid of with COVID-19. We're afraid of dying. We're afraid of us dying or our loved ones dying or humanity dying, you know? So it's a really powerful thing when death and mortality comes and just stares you right in the face and says, hey, I'm part of you. I'm part of this thing called life.
And the great thing is knowing that we are going to die and knowing that it's limited, it's a deeper invitation to life and feeling alive. So what's the point of even being here if we're not going to fully allow ourselves to enter it and to enter those things, those activities, that the relationships that make us feel all the way alive? And I think there's so much that we have indoctrinated from the world of being safe and trying to hold on to the things that we think will create some sort of protection from us, but they're actually making us feel really dead inside and making us feel really depleted and burned out. And so life then doesn't feel like life. So we're holding on to something that doesn't even feel good. And then once we actually are confronted with the fact of, hey, this whole ride is going to end, it could end in a second. I mean, I think that's part of this virus too, is it told us all of life, everything can change immediately.
Yeah.
Right? So it's precious. It's here. And the fact that it's precious gives us an opportunity to enter into a different kind of conversation of what happens if I let go of those things that I was clinging onto that actually became prison bars.
And also, what if I let go of the idea that my one little life doesn't affect anybody? Because we're seeing in a really present way how one carrier of a contagion
or of a contagious emotion affects everyone. And that's our choice. What am I walking around carrying? Because it massively affects the world.
And on that same point, if one person can carry a virus, that also means one person can carry an antidote. So you might have that healing factor inside of you that could help heal someone's dream, heal someone's heart, heal someone's grief. So then the personal responsibility of, oh, if I give my voice, my dharma to the world, it really can create an impact.
Yeah. Kelly Turner, we love you so much. It is such an honor.
I love you guys so much.
It is such an honor to see you embrace all the sides of who you are, to embrace the incredible intuitive researcher you are, and to also embrace the very powerful creator that you are. It is so exciting to see you stand for a life where you're bringing all of your gifts to the table, and then we get to watch how all of your gifts impact the world in such a powerful way. And it's such an honor to have been featured on your docuseries, and we are so blessed by you asking us and by us getting to have that conversation in this way. And I feel so present to all the people listening to this podcast who will be affected by you and the impact that you've had and just showing up the way you do and just being so curious about the next question and then turning that into this docuseries that's going to create so much healing during this specifically fear-based time. And so I just want to say congratulations to you. We saw and we know as filmmakers what it takes. And we know the timeline you were under and how fast you worked and how much editing you had to do. And so we just want to say we honor you and we see you. And this is an epic, epic feat that really deserves massive celebration. And I'm so excited that it's now present in the universe and so many people are going to get to experience it.
Yay. And I'm so excited everyone gets to meet you guys. Episode 4, you guys are in... Let's see. I put you in tons, I think. Your listeners know, I was going to interview them just about increasing positive emotions. And then, as usual, we covered spirituality, intuition, social support, reasons for living. So, I think on the website, it says that you guys are in, 2 or 3, but you actually might be in, 4.
So. I mean, when I think about reasons for living, Kristen's hair always comes to mind. So of course, I'm sure she's featured in that one.
I'm sure. Well, I'm so glad. I'm so glad the world's going to get to meet you guys through the docuseries. And I can't wait to see what you guys create next. I'm psyched you're doing Create pop-ups virtually.
Create! Yeah. Yay. So as a reminder, every Wednesday for the next month, you guys can catch us Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. live on Zoom. And come and get some of that Create magic. We're back in action.
That's awesome. I will be there.
We love you so much, Kelly. And thank
you. I love you guys too.
Thank you for giving this gift to the planet with both of your books, your work in the Heal documentary, and now your work in creating this incredible docuseries. I know that you are radically contributing to the healing on this planet. And
I am
just grateful to know you.
And we're going to put the link so that people can watch and find you and find your books and all these things. So friends, if you don't know Kelly, or also if you're dying to see her because she's very beautiful, we'll put all those links so you can find her.
Well, thank you. I'm not feeling very beautiful during COVID-19, but thank you guys for having me on your podcast.
Thank you so much for listening. We love to feel like we have friends all over the world in you who are committed to doing their dream on the planet.
And if you liked this podcast and you want to find out more about what we're doing or who we are, our pop-up classes, our online classes, you can check all of that out at thecreateseries.com.
And if you want to be part of our Facebook community,